We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ NV, Jess Hilarious, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got some special guests with us this morning. We got the brother Charles Coleman and Trymaine Lee. Welcome.
Peace.
How y'all feeling?
Morning.
All right, thanks for having us. How's everything?
We blessed, black, and highly favored. Everything good. How y'all feeling?
Man, I'm glad to be here, man. Super glad to be here. Glad we can make this happen.
It's a lot going on in the world, but we here. We thugging it out.
Absolutely.
All right.
I loved what y'all was doing. I love the black men in America, the road to 2024. Why was that important to do?
You know, it's always important for us to, in our positions, to center black men, right? We understand that we are absent in so many spaces, right? Financial spaces, mm-hmm. various institutions, in certain neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. But for us to be able to elevate our voices and center black men, because sometimes, as we know, brothers feel like they're not getting attention at home. They're not getting attention from candidates. Mm-hmm. They're not getting the attention that they deserve. So Charles and I came together and said, we have this platform, so why not elevate these brothers' voices?
And I also think that when you're talking about our discourse now politically, we have a very lazy way of looking at it. And when I say we, I'm talking about our community. And one of the reasons why is because we like to say, go vote. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of sort of with the pretext that you're voting in the way that I feel aligns with my interests. If you're not, I'm not necessarily keen on that. And what we wanted to do was present a variety of perspectives in a way that was balanced, that was fair, that allowed people to see, all right, I may not agree with that ideologically, but I understand it's part of the conversation. Yeah. And so that was like really, really important to both of us.
Why does it feel like, you know, they already setting it up to if Donald Trump gets back in the White House, it's going to be black men's fault?
Well, they always going to. The thing about this is they don't send the message, right? When the message isn't received properly, mm-hmm. and you don't motivate folks, you don't explain why you're the better candidate, it's almost as if they are requiring and demanding 100% fealty, that 87% of black men voting a certain way isn't enough. And they will most certainly blame us when we don't show up, when their messaging wasn't resonating properly.
I'll give you an easy one, because you need a bad guy, right? Like, you need a bad guy. You need a villain in this political conversation. And unfortunately, we are in America, and, you know, it's easier to paint us as the bad guy rather than to look at data, right? Like, if you look at the data, if Donald Trump were to win, there's no question that college-educated white women and uneducated white women who are voting would have had a huge hand in that, mm-hmm. right? Instead of looking at the demographics that point to a particular area, it's easy to say, I like this narrative. We're going to put it on black men. And so I think that that's really the answer. Like, you need a villain. To compensate for the fact that, to Tremaine's point, you did not do your job. Like, it's amazing to me how in our conversation about the elected officials that want our votes, we will put more onus on the voter
yes.
who's dissatisfied mm-hmm. rather than on the candidates who have failed to satisfy the voters.
And the refusal to actually engage. They're going to spend the money to get out the vote. The last minute. Souls to the polls. They're going to try to get people in church service and get them to the polls. As opposed to, mm-hmm. which I, first of all, I hate that. And they put a little twang in their voice too. Mm-hmm. Souls to the polls. Mm-hmm. Put a little sauce on it. Mm-hmm. But they're going to wait to the very last minute instead of actually engaging with the community daily, right? Be in the community. Set roots up so people know you're there. Talking to brothers all around the country, what they say is they don't ever, ever acknowledge us. I was talking to a brother the other day, and he said, even with Donald Trump's foolishness, with the sneakers and sneaker con and all that, mm-hmm. at least the devil's saying your name. You want somebody to say your name. At least he's saying it.
Yeah.
And when he said that, at least the devil's saying your name, it sounds like, you know, it sounds wild, but at least there are some overtures there.
Mm-hmm. Charlamagne, I'm being curious. Where did you become this lightning rod of, like, controversy around black men in the vote?
I have no idea.
I was trying to have this conversation with somebody, and I was trying to go back. I was like, you know, ABC News, that's new. You know what I'm saying? We all know if you don't vote for me, if you ain't black, well, mm-hmm. you know, all that. But I was just like, why is it? Where did this sort of come from?
I think it's because left-wing media does not do a good job of pushing the narrative they want, and they do a good job of pushing right-wing media narratives. For example, if I'm on something like This Week ABC and I say Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, Donald Trump is a fascist, Donald Trump led an attempted coup of this country, and then I say, but Joe Biden is an uninspiring candidate who doesn't have no main character energy, Fox will take that part and highlight it, and instead of the left taking the first part of what I said and highlighting that, they'll just respond to what Fox said. Mm. And then it becomes this
easy villain, though.
Easy villain.
Yeah. I think, sometimes I feel like it should go back to the days where you don't know who somebody's candidate is, right? You just talk about voting and getting people to get out there to vote, and you hear both sides or all three sides if you're talking independent, and nobody talks about who they're voting for. Because I think that creates a form of almost like I'm shaming you because you're voting independent, or I'm shaming you because you're voting Republican, or I'm shaming you because you're voting Democrat, right? Because you said, you know, we should vote for our interests, right? But if somebody's interest doesn't, you know, fall on Jess's interest, why should I have to go that way? And then if I say I'm voting independent, oh, you're voting independent, you effing up the votes, you know, we can't win. And I think it really clouds things. My mom and my dad never talked, you know, to their friends about who they were voting for. They talked about everybody should go register and vote and what it meant to vote, but they never really talked about what candidate they were voting for.
The choices have become so stark, though. So it's not just a world where ideals like trickle-down economics or policing in this country or even border issues. Mm-hmm. It's become clearly there are these white supremacist impulses embedded in our politics now. Mm-hmm. And so it's unfair that now we have to expose ourselves, and sometimes you have the ideas of a Democratic plantation, and you got to stick to this side or that side. Mm-hmm. But the stakes are so high that I think it's a legitimate concern of how folks are arriving at their vote. We should have full access to the franchise, which we don't. Mm-hmm. But you should be able to have complete independence and be able to keep it to yourself. But I think in this environment, it's become dangerous.
I agree with Envy in the sense that we know that shaming people does not result in folks going to vote. Mm-hmm. It does not. Shaming people is not a successful strategy. It's not a productive strategy. I think the solution ultimately is to create a space that allows for informed perspectives to have a voice and for people to become educated.
It's called Black Men in America, Road 2024.
That's a fact. It's on Peacock right now. Check us out. Mm-hmm. So we outside. So, you know, that is definitely a thing. I think that the other side to it is it's incumbent upon us to stop going through this cycle where we either stay uneducated about the entire process of civic engagement, or B, choose not to share what we know mm-hmm. with other people on the off years, right? Like, how many times are we going to be like, well, you got to do this because it's the lesser of two evils, or you're going to go mm-hmm.
hold right.
those. The problem that people on the left that are terrified about another reign of Donald Trump are having is that you had 4 years and you didn't do anything with it to get people to understand or to get people to feel like this is what's going to be different. And now you want to sort of do a rush job and shame people, to Envy's point, or scare people to the other point.
The sky is falling.
The sky is falling again. Right?
Every cycle, the sky is falling.
And that is not an effective strategy. And so I think that if you're going to get to a place where you're talking about people just sort of being able to, you know, discuss what their interests are and vote along those lines, they have to become educated where that's something that they can
do. I don't think people like to have conversations, right? Like, so you look at, I'll just take Floyd Mayweather, right? So Floyd Mayweather a couple of years ago said he was voting for Donald Trump, and everybody, the whole black community hated him, gave him the middle finger, turned their back on him, whatever. But nobody ever asked him why. Why he felt that way, you know? Or why are you not voting for Joe Biden during that time? Because he might have felt like, well, Joe Biden did this to me, or my father told me that when he passed this law, it affected him. And we never ask why to have those conversations. We're so quick to turn our back on somebody that doesn't necessarily agree that what we have, and we just hate to have conversations.
I'll give you an example and then sort of an anecdote. Number one, my biggest concern in this entire discussion is that as black people, we are negotiating our views around blackness based off of whether you agree with the candidate who I agree with. Right. That is deeply problematic.
Right.
Imagine you have a disagreement with someone in your community who looks like you about someone who's respectfully not in your community.
That's correct. Right.
And because they don't align with your choice of someone who's not in our community, you are now then trying to invalidate their blackness.
That's right. I'm not about to argue with you, argue you over no white people.
That is absurd. Right. I'm not right? So I'll give you a great example.
The whole conversation through the lens of the white gaze.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example real quick. I have a friend. He's a plumber in Chicago. He employs all black people because he believes in supporting black people and teaching black young men and women trades. He is having trouble bidding on contracts because of the influx of immigrant labor into the city of Chicago, and other contractors are underbidding him because they are paying their contractors, their employees
a lot
under
less.
The table a lot so, less
cash. Yep.
So he's like, look, on this immigration issue, I actually feel like I'm more aligned with what conservatives are saying than what Democrats are saying. And I want to support black people. I want to employ black people. I want to put money into the black community. You can't tell me that this man is anti-black because he has that position.
Right.
So when you talk about priorities, it shapes out in very different ways for very different people.
But you also can't ignore the fact that when you align yourself on a singular interest or a singular issue, that you're also in bid with a whole bunch of other people, namely white supremacists. If you're a Republican, it doesn't make you a white supremacist. But if you're white supremacist, blatantly, you're probably a Republican. not to disavow the idea that there aren't white supremacists racist in the Democratic Party. You know, everyone who was in the fighting for the union didn't necessarily think black people were equal. They just believed in this idea of the union. And so there are white supremacists on both sides. But that side on the right now, it's become part and parcel of the party now. And especially with Donald Trump's recent takeover of the RNC,
right.
Expect to see more of that.
So what do Democrats do? Because, you know, the messaging of fear, I don't think is going to work in 2024. But this is the year we should actually be afraid. Because, you know, we've been hearing the same rhetoric every election cycle, right? Every presidential election cycle. It's a threat to democracy. This candidate, especially Republicans, they always demonize them. It's a threat to democracy. This is the time it actually is. But you can't make people believe it because you've been saying it for years.
You know what I really don't understand? So last night I was in this off-the-record conversation with some folks in the White House. And I had this very same conversation about why aren't you, you know, going to the community? People don't even when you look at the charts and unemployment and wealth and everything is on the rise from Donald Trump, but the people don't feel it. And they're still trying to figure out the messaging. They say, you know, we know. We're trying to figure out the messaging. You're supposed to be the Big Ten party filled with empowered black people all across this country. Mm-hmm. And you're still trying to figure out how to communicate with black men. And the way we live so segregated in this country, right, you know where the black people are. You know what institutions they're in, what neighborhoods they're in. You know the power brokers, those in the working class, the middle. You know who they are. Why aren't you still going to them? They're still trying to figure out how to message all this good news, but to your point earlier, but still responding in that white supremacist kind of echo chamber. Mm-hmm. It's not doing them any services.
I think it's really a matter of an inability to acknowledge their failures. So part of what has to happen.
An ability or refusal?
Which one? Or refusal. Yeah, right. Correct.
Which one?
A refusal that is couched as an inability. That's a great point. I think that part of why the messaging is falling flat is you can't say to me, you can't talk to me about all of the things you're going to do, all the great things that you've done as if this is this rosy picture without acknowledging, yo, we done messed up before. Right, we got a lot of work that we need to do. And we acknowledge that. So for as long as that is treated as a cardinal sin, like, yo, we can't really talk about that because we're going to alienate white voters, the messaging in terms of black people and in large part black men is going to fall flat.
The political calculus that it takes to say, you know what, we know this is right, but if we speak about black men too loudly,
correct,
we know what's going to happen. There's going to be a backlash immediately. Not just from the right, but also in that center part of your own party.
You Hotep. That's what happens.
But you know, even with that, it's like, yo, man, when I hear that, it's like, yeah, I'm a vote, but how can I ever truly support you if you don't even want to say my name in public? I ain't no hoe. You know what I'm saying? Why is talking about black men, talking about black people, a bad electoral strategy?
But they also, we have to be honest, and again, this is beyond party. They fear us, so they've marginalized us. And as long as we're persona non grata in any of these spaces in this discourse, we can still, again, be the boogeyman, the villain, but they never have to actually appeal to us because there's a general consensus that black men are to be feared or not to be respected. Over-incarcerated, we're not in college, we're all those things. We've been isolated to the point when it's like common knowledge that we are that.
I get so much heat for this, but it's the truth. We've been, as a community, the side piece of the Democratic Party for so long. That when we step out of that role and we start actually asking questions and pushing back, now it's a problem.
Yep.
And I mean, that's really the dynamic that exists, unfortunately, with the left. And so it highlights the very complex nature of what it is to be black in America and then engage political systems. Because you realize, like, okay, these folks over here are not really for me. These folks over here, they mess with me, but they mess with me in the dark. When it's convenient, mm-hmm. when they need me, when they mm-hmm. want something, right? And then when you can't have that honest dialogue, you know, to Envy's point, and you start thinking about a third party, you have folks turn on each other. And it's like, well, where do I go? What do I do? So it's a very, very complex space. And it highlights the old quote, in America, black people do not have permanent political friends. We only have permanent interests.
Interest.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that we need to sort of understand before we sort of blindly align with any political party. We need to figure out what is our ideology first.
I agree. I don't know why if you're black in America, you shouldn't be voting to Republicans or Democrats. When I see these MAGA crazies that are black, I'm like, man, what is your issue? When I see these black liberals that are crazy over these, I'm like, what is your issue? Like, none of us should be beholden to these parties.
Right. And this guy has gotten so rabid. I was down in South Carolina at a barbershop, and I was talking to brothers who were all Democratic voters, right? And I said, are y'all planning to vote for Donald Trump? They said, oh, nah, he's a real problem. I said, well, do you have homeboys and people in your family who are considering? He said, yeah. I said, well, why? And they explained why. It felt like more money. It felt like this. But they were not voters. They were not voting for Donald Trump. So I get the clip on TV. It's running MSNBC all day. I'm down in South Carolina doing my thing. And the rabid response from black liberals and some white folks in there, they like, you and Charlamagne, y'all ain't pushing back. I'm like, first of all, what me and Charlamagne got to do with each mm-hmm. other? You became the boogeyman. So all of a sudden, it's like, me and Charlamagne. No, it was real. They were like, you and Charlamagne, and y'all trying to get the Trump. And I'm like, yo, I'm just asking the brothers. One, if I come to you and invite you to give me your opinion, I'm not going to beat you up for how you feel.
Absolutely. I'm not a surrogate. I'm not trying to convince nobody.
I don't work for the party. I work for the people.
That's right.
I'm here as a messenger. I'm here for the people, not for any politician. But the response, for 1 second, again, I don't agree with anything Candace Owens has to say. But when you talk about a Democratic plantation, I'm like, is this the plantation?
Yes.
That they're willing to stab me? The brother, y'all been known for decades doing this work. And I'm a broker of the people, and then this is the response?
And all you're doing is amplifying what the people are saying. Guess what? That's what they should be. They should have their strategists and their campaign teams down right there listening to the people, and then they would understand why people feel the way that they do. I'm not making this up.
It's a true story. Exactly. And the wild thing about it was, that happened literally, the special premiered on a Sunday. It premiered on Sunday, February 4th, right? That happened like literally that Saturday because that was the Democratic primary in South Carolina. That clip ran. A right-wing outlet took it,
Fox took
chopped
it
up, ran with it, made it seem worse than it was. Similar to your point, mm-hmm. Charlamagne, did exactly what you was talking about. And then all of a sudden, we just got all lumped. It became like a Hotep hateration in this dancery. Like, it was just, everybody was catching strays. And I was with my man, so I'm like, yo, y'all haven't even, and they thought it was part of the special, which, even if it was, my point was, well, don't you understand that these are actual people who have these concerns? And so trying
and
to
these
shame
are your,
people,
And these are your voters.
Yes.
Right,
these
trying
are
to
your
shame
voters.
People from the conversation isn't going to make it go away.
They start exposing, he had a young brother, I felt bad for this young brother, he's like 22 years old, was somewhat reluctant to do this, but I knew his cousin, so everybody came together. And he was like, you know, my age, I think he was like 22. He's like, we only voted one time. So all we know is Trump and the pandemic and all this. They started releasing his public information. Oh, you ain't struggling that much. You just bought a house with your girlfriend. I was like, and the young brother, like, that's how you beat people out of the process.
Yes.
As long as you could create a chilling effect, you're having the opposite response that you want. You want an engaged public, and young brothers especially, that will be proselytizing to their homeboys and be able to articulate some of these ideas, right, and machinations of the machine. Instead, you push them into a corner. It was terrible, man.
Do you think people need to change, Democrats need to change their perception of the hypothetical swing voter? Like, you know, because they don't think about black men when they think about the swing voter. Like, the person that probably voted for Obama, you know, might have voted for Hillary, but then they're like, you know what, I'm going to get this Trump thing a try, you know?
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Well, I'm going to go back to Biden. Like, who, you know?
I think the only thing that I would say in response to that is Democrats don't have to change that. We have to change that for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to make that decision on their own unless there's something that moves them to do so. So as long as I can count on you to show up when I ask you to show up, mm-hmm. right? Like, as my side piece, right? Like, that's what I'm just saying.
You about to give me something. You said it 3 times. Right? Side
just,
piece.
No, just saying, like, you
don't get in trouble, bro.
That's the last I was saying.
Side piece at night.
As long as I can count on you to show up when I show up, that's never going to change. So that's on us
mm-hmm.
as the electorate to say, like, I am not set in stone as a voting bloc that you can necessarily count on. I'm available, right? But you got to work for it. You got to do something to get me out to vote for your candidate.
I think that's also that generational Democrat, right? Yeah, I look at my mother and my father when they started voting and they would take me to the school to vote. What would they usually do back then, right? Well, Democrat, right? That's what they did, right? Because that's what their parents did, right? So when I first started voting, when I was 18, what did I do at first? Democrat, 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 Democrat. Because I was like, that's what my parents did. That's what it was. So a lot of people still do that. And I think a lot of times Democrats know that. That when people go into that booth, they don't care who's on that board. They're just going to do Democrat, Democrat, and Democrat until you start understanding and learning. And then when you start understanding and learning, you don't know who to learn from. You don't know who's right. You don't know what stories are fake. Some people say, well, you go to MSNBC or you go to, and some of those stories don't be true. So it's like, who do I rely on to find out the facts when it comes to these people?
Well, first of all, MSNBC is always the facts.
My question.
No, it's not.
It's Russell Johnson.
I'm halfway.
I think it's, you know, I think that it's, that is a very valid question. And I think in today's age, misinformation is a thing that people don't talk enough about. And that actually I saw it. When Tremaine was telling the story about what happened, how quickly things can get out of hand. I think part of it is you do have to get media from a variety of sources and a variety of perspectives, because that's the only way you can compare and start to see, like, all right, so this is saying something different than this, and this is saying something, like, what's starting to align, what actually makes sense. But if you lock yourself into one media source, if you're someone who's just starting out and you're saying, like, all right, I want to kind of figure this out. You need to be able to look at a variety of media sources on the same story. So if it's just like Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago, what happened today? Mm-hmm. Read the Fox News article, read the MSNBC article, read the CNN article, read the BBC article. There are going to be certain things that are going to be universally true that will be reported in all of them. You could probably take that as fact.
But you know, the only way that actually works, though, is if you arrive with a base of information and facts. So you'll be able to arrive and be able to decipher and filter through.
Correct.
Our news filter is so off because people aren't arriving with the baseline information and understanding how the system works, let alone the actual nuances of an actual issue. So when you go to Fox, you know that's nonsense because A, B, C, or D. Or if you go to MSNBC, you know that doesn't sound right because I know A, B, C, or D. But to your earlier question, though, this idea of the mythology around the stories we tell ourselves as Americans – and the mythology around what a working class voter is, what a middle of the road voter is, they don't take into account a Youngstown, Ohio, which is always the poster child for the working class white man. It's a majority black city who arrived there through the Great Migration and were blue collar workers. And so as long as they're trying to do this political, acrobatics around, we can't offend this group because we need that working class middle, that white working class. As long as you have that mythology that there's a certain kind of cloistered away black voter, and that they're not also in the middle, they're not also independent thinkers, and they're not also working class or blue collar workers, then you can continue to see the same paradigm.
And I also think when it comes to MSNBC, CNN, Fox, you know, they're not really interested in reporting the news. They're interested in ratings and revenue. I think Trump brings ratings, and that's why they want to have as many Trump stories as possible. I think this new narrative of black men or black people being against the Democratic Party, I think that is another thing that's getting them a lot of engagement and a lot of ratings. So they're running with storylines as opposed to actually trying to present real news.
I somewhat disagree. I mean, I think when we're understanding how the cable news space works, it's like a newspaper. And I'm an old newspaper guy. It's like the front page to the metro section is actually news. Then you get to the op-ed and commentary section. So at MSNBC, you'll have news all day. And then you get into a little commentary where it's more opinion. For a long time, you hadn't seen Donald Trump on our airwaves. But then this is the news. Again, as an old reporter, we are leading with the fire. There are more important things happening than death and destruction or the missing kid who got shot in the head or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But that actually is the fire. And so I don't know if it's intentional, like, we got to get the ratings, so let's turn to Trump. But it also is such a break from our norms, which we didn't handle well the first time. So I think we probably need more attention, but just interrogating what this man is doing and saying. I think interrogating him more, not just,
I saw MSNBC run a headline that says, Charlamagne is pushing MAGA messaging. Simply because they asked me on January 15th, Fox News asked me, do I think the border is going to be an issue in November? And I said yes. And the reason I said yes is because based off conversations I'm having with people, whether it's, here in New York City when Mayor Eric Adams, they made all of the kids do remote learning so they could house the migrants, or whether it's, people I run into the street talking to me about their neighborhoods being overrun with gangs that are coming across the border. Or is people in Chicago telling me about how they feel like the migrants are getting more resources than they are? These are just conversations that regular, everyday black people are having with me. So I said that. How is that MAGA messaging?
Right.
The border is the number one issue.
I think, right. Mm-hmm. I think that we've entered into a space that has become increasingly, not even politicized, just polarized. Mm-hmm. And the sensationalism around people's positions in a way that allows you to sort of just from a binary standpoint be like, you all the way over here, they all the way over here, is something that has really hurt dialogue and made it difficult for people to have understanding. And I think to Envy's earlier point, we don't have conversations anymore. Right. And that's a big problem. And that's one of the reasons why Tremaine and I did the special Black Men in America, The Road to 2024, is we really wanted to highlight the fact that, number one, these conversations are happening. Whether you try to shame brothers away from having these discussions or not, they are happening, mm-hmm. to Charlamagne's point. And number two, they can happen in a space that allows for us to sort of have a dialogue, not always agree, but also not be disagreeable about it. And that was something that we really were intentional about when we talked to Jeezy, when we talked to Hakeem Jeffries, the speaker, the minority speaker in the House or minority leader in the House. We talked to, you know, people from all walks of life who had very different ideological and political perspectives and heard different things. And it was okay, right? And I think that we need more of that. And let me be very honest. Yes, I'm an MSNBC guy. Tremaine is as well. But at the end of the day, we're here for community. And I don't expect that any platform, respectfully, right? And I obviously I bang with MSNBC, but I don't expect that any platform is going to do that for us.
There's not an institution in America that's going to treat us fairly.
We got to do that for us. We have to be the ones to be able to say, like, all right, we can have these conversations ourselves without turning around and being like, oh, well, you don't agree with me, then I'm questioning your blackness.
And we can't afford to be at odds. In this moment and every moment that preceded this, we cannot afford that. And I think that, you know, it ends up becoming entertainment for some folks when this is really life or death.
Mm-hmm. You think we should have more mixed conversations? Meaning that, you know, I was saying that I feel like the vice president should go on Fox News. Like, she should go on Hannity the same way President Obama used to go on O'Reilly Factor. Like, I feel like we can't keep talking about people are allowing people to talk about you without talking to them.
That requires good faith, though.
That's what
that requires, that we're going to arrive at this moment and have a dialogue and disagree and have this discourse and try to unpack a few things, not a gotcha moment that we can circulate on social media for that red meat. Let's get a win. The libtards, the this one, that one. You can't operate in that environment because it's just not a good faith environment to operate in.
But you don't think it's hard to take you out of context if I'm sitting here talking to you, if the audience is actually watching it in real time? I think it's easier when you make a statement somewhere else and then Fox can take it and remix it.
It is, but I still think it's still going to be chopped and screwed. But I still think that Tremaine is absolutely right. You have to come to the conversation with good intentions, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you really do, you want to have a conversation, or are you trying to have a gotcha moment? If you're really trying to have a conversation, ask the tough questions, right? Like, ask the difficult questions, have the difficult issues come up, and let's have a conversation. Just keep it balanced.
All right, where?
Just keep it balanced. If we're going to do it, let's do it. Just keep it about. I think that's the only caveat. It has to be in a space that is truly about a balanced discussion before you can try to say, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't do that outlet or what have you. Because unfortunately, there are too many outlets and platforms that really are just looking for a viral moment as opposed to trying to promote a conversation, because we know controversy gets clicks.
It seemed like it's working for Gavin Newsom, though. Him going on Fox, you know, having conversations with Hannity, debating with Ron DeSantis. Now, all of a sudden, people got his name in the conversation to be president.
Because this is the way he moves. I think he's a singular kind of a force. He looks presidential, right? Mm-hmm. So I think he just has a certain thing about him that I think he can move that way where any number of folks on the left couldn't move like that, though.
I think also Gavin Newsom presents a different alternative when you're talking about leftist politics that doesn't exist, and so people are kind of interested in that. You know, people, you know, for whatever reasons, then I can name a lot of them, people may not necessarily be thrilled with Kamala as being representative or Vice President Harris as mm-hmm. being representative of the future of the Democratic Party. So Gavin Newsom steps in and he's more or less unchallenged in terms of that space. He's an early adapter, if you will. So there's some interest there, and I think that he's navigated it fairly well.
Yeah, because even that's unfair when they say things like you should be scared of a Kamala Harris presidency.
Right, of course.
Why? Her policies wouldn't be that, wouldn't right, be different right, than any other right. Democrat. It's because she's black mm-hmm. and she's a woman.
And because she's a woman.
She's not afforded that space.
Now, I know these brothers got to go, but I just got to, this is away from politics. I just got a question. David Banner, recently was circulating in the last couple of days that David Banner was talking about HBCUs, and he was saying
the answer is Howard University at all times.
All right, well, thank you for joining
appreciate
us.
Appreciate it. What's the question?
No, I'm just kidding. You know, I went to Hampton.
I know.
He said HBCU shouldn't be a choice, that all black students should go to HBCU. It shouldn't be an option. Yeah. They should not go to these white universities. They should have to go to a HBCU. And that's what he felt. And I want to ask what
you know, the problem is, I think in all these things, we are still all these centuries after enslavement fighting to be whole citizens, and we haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. So full access to the franchise, full access to the full fruit of what it means to be an American. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes with the choices to do whatever we so please. And so certainly we understand these storied institutions have been the bedrock and foundation of our communities for a very long time. But I think we do need to allow black people to go where they want, have bad ideas, to our point about voting. Again, we don't require any of that. Big shout. Listen, my wife went to Southern University, so I don't know. I'm gonna have to fight on her behalf here. baby, it got me, baby.
I wanted to tell you, for people listening, Envy put his Hampton helmet up. I wasn't doing that.
Hampton football helmet.
When I said, "Oh God."
Yeah. But so you know, the only thing with that is, you know, I went to Hampton University. My daughter didn't. I wanted her to go, but when we went, you know, we went through that whole thing. We went Morgan State. We went to Clark. We went to Spelman. We went to Hampton. We went to Howard. But it was the programs that she wanted to do. Yeah. And the HBCUs didn't have the program which she wanted to major in. And that was the biggest problem. And, you know, when I'm talking to somebody, the HBCU presidents, I tell them that we have to change a lot of the curriculum because the curriculums are still old and they don't have some of the new curriculum. Like, you know, we had Ryan and Ocho, and they were talking about how, you know, brothers are making millions of dollars gaming.
Yeah.
And not coding, but playing games and how it's a big business. And these creators are making that. And a lot of the times our HBCUs don't reflect that.
If it's free, when you think about this idea of reparations, which is in the news now in California,
right,
and my latest podcast, Uncounted Millions of Power Reparations, is like, how are we made whole in this country? We understand the horrors of slavery and then the hell that came after. All the violent dispossession that we face of stripping of land and resources. And as part of that, the Freedmen's Bureau establishing these HBCUs, these land-grant colleges, I think that would make sense if, as part of repair, as far as making us whole, that HBCUs are free, and I think that changes the conversation.
I agree. You know, I am going to look at this from the standpoint of also being an HBCU alum, and when I was at Howard, I was a board of trustee, member of the board of trustees twice. So I'm looking at it from like a very practical standpoint, and being a lawyer. So a lot of people may not really on the top of their head be remembering the Supreme Court's recent decision that outlawed or declared unconstitutional race-based admissions considerations, the case against Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
The significance of that in this conversation is what it is going to do is you have a generation that, demographically speaking, is the biggest and largest since the baby boomers that are now sort of like in college or entering college or in that space. So you have more people who are now going to have less access to more schools because affirmative action is essentially gutted at the collegiate level. Our HBCUs right now cannot handle the capacity of students that are already there from a housing place. You know this from a facilities place. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a thing, right? You go to James Hall or Pierce Hall right now and it's paint peeling off the walls. And I'm not even being funny. I'm being very serious, right? So the problem with what David Banner is saying, and I respect David Banner.
Yeah,
I really, really do. The problem is it's simply not practical. And it's also not practical. It becomes further impractical if we are not going to support our institutions with the type of money and funding that they need for it. Not just maintenance, but also expansion.
They can use some of that good Ukraine money, though, right? And their money flow, Ukraine money?
How many millions?
Hundreds of millions. I mean, there's money. That's what it comes down to. Is like in this whole reparations conversation, when pollsters, you know, and social scientists ask white people, is it a problem with the amount of money? No. Is it who should qualify? No. Is that they don't believe black people are deserving. And so it all comes down to whether we are deserving, despite that not only were we drivers of the wealth, we actually were the wealth. You think about 1860, black bodies were the most valuable commodity in this country, let alone the actual physical structures that we built and the whole entire economy, taking this colony, this small outlier colony, into the global power it is today, right? But it's a matter of what they want to do. It was still we're not deserving.
To your earlier question, Charlamagne, when you talk about democratic messaging, if foreign aid, the two words foreign aid, right, regardless of where it's going, I don't want to get in that discussion, but if foreign aid are not bad words, then reparations should not be a bad
Absolutely.
Word. Absolutely. That's the core of what we're talking about. And I don't mean to make it as singularly an issue about reparations, but I'm just using that as an example for when I use the term, that term side piece or like, oh, well, you know, you kind of, we're going to deprioritize your interests. If you can say foreign aid to whatever countries, plural, that you're going to say them, then why can't we have this conversation about something that's directly
intended? You know how much each one of those bombs costs? Millions that we drop in.
Of course.
You know, Donald Trump is going to say it. At some point over the next few months, Donald Trump is going to say, we keep sending all of this money, you know, to Ukraine and all of these countries. We're funding NATO. That could be used for black people reparations. It's just going to be a line. And watch what it does. Remember I said it. Remember what y'all said earlier about people don't even want to say black people's name, right. Don't even say black men's name? He's going to say
my blacks. My blacks deserve reparations.
Watch.
My blacks.
Watch.
Well, we appreciate you brothers for joining us. Tell them when they can catch you. Because I see, when does the series come on?
So it is
Power Reparations.
Reparations.
So Uncounted Millions, the Power of Reparations, where our episode 5 drops tomorrow. It's the most amazing reparations story you never heard. America actually paid reparations once before for enslavers, and a black man somehow finessed his way into the system and actually got reparations for slavery. Episode 5 drops tomorrow, Thursday.
All right.
And you can also check out Black Men in America, The Road to 2024 on Peacock. It's streaming live.
All right. Well, thank you, brothers, for joining us. Charles Coleman, Jermaine Lee. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up
in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced.
Bring it!
Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.